Welcome to the New Zealand Tech Podcast, presented by Paul Spain and Anne Guest.
Hello and welcome along to the New Zealand Tech Podcast. We are at episode, what episode are we at, Nate?
118.
I'm Paul Spain.
And I'm Juha Saarinen.
And Nate Dunn.
Welcome along, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Juha, nice to have you here for the first time.
Likewise, to have me here. I'm meant to be here.
Now, just for our listeners, tell us a little bit about where you fit into the...
It's the whole scene.
Into the tech and, journalism world.
Oh, well, I don't really fit in. I'm just sort of doing it as a hobby. No, I'm kidding. But I write for quite a few publications, which includes The Herald, Wired, Guardian, IT News in Australia. Basically, whoever would take my copy. And I've been doing it for a while, and I'm sort of a handsome person who... Handsome, you know, who likes to sort of touch things and pull them apart. That's what I do.
Cool. And, you have been doing it for a fair time, because I think I first... came across you when you were some other part of the world, about 95.
Ooh, that's too long. Was it 2005? No, okay, 95 then. 95 was fine, yep.
Yeah.
I've been doing it for too long, some people say.
You were in Singapore or some other part of the world, but you've made your way to New Zealand. You seem to quite like it here. You've been around for a while now.
Yeah. Gravity, you know, you sort of slide down the globe and then that's it. It's can't get away.
Get to the bottom of the world All right, well, great to have you on. Now,
thank you.
Let's jump into what's happening around the tech world. Orcon to start with.
Yeah.
Now, we talked last week about, there were some rumours that Orcon was being sold, and that basically they said, we've been on the market, I think, for a little while.
On the block, yeah, that's what they said.
And now I think what we're hearing is a deal has been done, that they have... Yep. Been sold apparently, but there's no formal announcement just yet. But probably coming.
There's no details at all.
Coming very soon, and we'll find out all of the juicy details in due course. So, I mean, what do you think that this will mean for the internet? You know, for internet users around the country, a change in the space. I guess it depends a lot on who's made the purchase.
Yeah, I think it wasn't one of Kordia's reasoning, or one of the reasons for them looking at selling, was that unless you're one of the top three or four players, it was just too hard to scrape by. But how long ago did Kordia take Orcon out from CB?
Oh, that was... I have to think about that one. That was 2002, wasn't it?
It's a fair time ago.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was that long, was it?
Well, it was quite a long time, actually. It's,
I thought it was about 2006 or 7.
I could Google it.
Yeah, you could. You could.
Because what was the reasoning for, and I didn't really follow the sale from CB, who started Orcon, to Kordia. Their reason for taking it over was so they had a presence on the ground, or...?
They wanted to be vertically integrated like everybody else, and also to have Orcon sell the wireless service in rural New Zealand, the Extend service and everything. So
so that just really hasn't panned out, hence why?
No. Cordy was hoping that Orcon would be really good at getting more customers, basically, but then that all changed as well. And, of course, with two really dominant players in the market, like Telecom and now Vodafone and Telstra Clear, then there's not much room for anyone else.
Yeah, it does change the sort of the playing field, the coming together of Telstra Clear and Vodafone. And I mean, that's virtually complete now, isn't it? I mean, with the Telstra Clear brand will be completely gone within just a matter of days, really, in most regards anyway. Yeah. So it is a big change in the playing field.
I'm even hearing that the Vodafone is moving to Smells Farm now. So that's going to be Vodafone HQ. So I'm not sure what they're going to do with the venue place, Halsey Street, but...
They're going to move across there.
Mm.
I remember reading GigZone did a whole stack of Interview the CEO series. I think it was 2 years ago, maybe 3 years ago. Mm. And I remember they spoke to a few of the head players, and I remember Cecil, who was the CEO of World Exchange at that stage, had said how hard it was to make any money off just being an ADSL provider, and what you needed to do was bundle it with a whole lot of other features, and that's why they had phone services. And a whole lot of other things.
Yeah.
So really, ADSL wasn't a loss leader, but it wasn't something that would make you a millionaire overnight. So.
No, well, apparently the profit margin is, or at the time when I looked at it last, was $50. And you might say, well, $50 what, a month? No, a year. Per customer.
Not a lot of money to be made there. And hence why we've seen, you know, the offshoring of you know, customer service and support and those sorts of things. Interesting, I tweeted yesterday around a situation that I had with Orcon, and I had to get hold of their customer service to sort out a little build problem. And I was quite surprised. I got pushed off to the offshore call center, but they were very, very good, and I ended up with somebody, you know, that had to go away and speak to maybe two or three people. But they owned that process and didn't sort of say, oh, someone will get back to you, or, you know, you often really get mucked around by customer support. But I found it was really good in that case anyway, and they spoke to, I think, two or three different people to sort it out. And
I've had some very, very universally very good experience with overseas customer support. And I mean, you think that, like, when you call, I don't know, if you're a telecom customer, that they wouldn't have a clue what it's like here, but they're actually really well trained most of the time, and they actually know their stuff as well, so they don't just read scripts to you.
Yeah, I think that's changed a lot over the last few years. When, you know, in the early days, it could be extremely rough around the edges, but yeah, it does seem to have improved somewhat, which is a good thing.
Probably the best case would be Telstra Clear. If you've ever tried to speak to them, they've got, every time I've spoken to them, they're notorious for, as soon as you cross over a boundary of something that they don't know, you get transferred offshore, and then as soon as they don't know, they'll transfer back to New Zealand. But that one moment, once that issue's resolved, and let's say if you've got three or four issues, as soon as that first issue is resolved, you can't sort of continue on with the Kiwi that you've spoken to, you get transferred straight back out again. Very frustrating. So I wonder if anyone at Telstra Clear had actually ever rung their help desk, because they're absolutely hopeless.
Oh, no, I wouldn't have to do that, actually.
No, not anymore.
There's a difference. They don't eat their own dog food. Huh?
Yeah. One device that I had a little bit of a play with over the last week is something we don't look at very often here on the podcast, was an inkjet printer. Now, I don't know if you guys have come across these at all, but this one was HP's OfficeJet Pro, now big long number, X576DW.
Oh, well, that's so memorable.
A hugely memorable name. But what was memorable about it was that it looked like a laser printer.
Right.
It was a reasonably sized multifunction, you know, copier, printer, scanner, fax type device with wireless and a network, Ethernet network connection. So, you know, competing with the sort of the higher end of the, multifunction laser printers.
Doesn't make coffee.
It doesn't make coffee. But no. More expensive than your basic coffee maker, about $1,200.
Ouch.
But it's, I guess it's designed to compete with laser printers at a similar, or colour laser printers at a similar price point. And the interesting thing about it is it's very, very fast to print. Talking over 60 pages a minute with the sort of numbers that it's rated at.
That's insane speed, yeah.
Like to get a laser printer that prints at that sort of speed, you're probably talking sort of, you know, $2,000 or $3,000, or a photocopier class machine, which is, you know, $5,000 or $10,000. So really, really snappy. And the big point that they were pushing is, as well as being very, very fast, the running costs are, you know, supposedly down at half the price of running a laser.
So, on an inkjet.
I know, that was the bit that was so odd. So that's why I thought I'd mention it, because it was just so different. So I don't know whether these are going to get any sort of uptake in the industry, but if that's the sort of thing that you need, it's worth having a little bit of a look, because this is a new piece of technology that's sort of floated into the market. So, there is still innovation happening in the
printing.
What's the print quality like?
The print quality is really, really good. Certainly for, you know, normal sort of text type type stuff, it was good just on plain paper, and the photos were good too. Not as good as some of the the specific photo printer
like the
type
kind of
inkjets.
Yeah.
certainly not on the paper that we ran through it. But you know, when you compare the sort of the smoothness of you know, the prints compared to a laser printer,
yeah,
on the text and so on, it looked you know, stunning. You couldn't see the pixels and so on like you used to be able to do in laser printers.
Mm.
Certainly in the early days, they used to be a bit chunkier.
Also, it has fax printing, so it really is on the cusp.
Hmm.
It's quite
fax printing, yeah. Mm. Yeah, that's modern technology. Do either of you guys have a fax machine?
What?
Yeah.
What? Now, I've been using internet fax for a while, but it's like, I can't remember last time I tried it.
Yeah, when do you need to send one, right? We keep one here so we can test people's fax machines, but we don't send or receive faxes
ourselves.
No.
We used to have a phone system division, I think, 3 years ago, and then we sold it off. So we did big VoIP phone systems, voice over IP phone systems. And fax was always a bit of a sticking point because trying to run fax over voice over IP is a little bit sort of hit and miss.
Mm,
it's really
and you say to people, well, actually, how many faxes do you get? And once they actually sat down and analysed, it was normally only one or two a month, if that, and they were normally spam.
Mm.
So I can't wait till fax and checks both die. Hopefully, quick death would be nice.
Well, you could fax checks, though.
Fax checks.
Yeah.
So you still see checks, do you, from time to time?
Oh, you still get the old, you know, grandparent or old person that wants to give you a check, and you've got to go down to the bank, and they sort of look at you sideways and go, and we're not really sure what this is.
I only get them from the United States, which is a pain because it takes forever to clear. It's just hopeless.
Yeah, they're very, very, very slow to clear, aren't they?
Oh, just complete stone age.
All right, now talking of cutting, flipping from that to cutting edge, Galaxy S4 launched in New York last week, Friday our time. Now, quite a few new features, sort of software wise.
Yeah, lots.
And a few sort of standout things from a hardware perspective. Now, over the last few weeks, we've seen HTC with the HTC One launch, which is sort of in a similar space. The new Android phone with a nice big screen and a full nice big full HD screen, and also the Sony Xperia Z that we've
which I'm holding in my hand
got here, and now it's Samsung's time. Now, interestingly, that they're not the first to sort of market with one of these new new handsets with the full HD screen, and it's still, I think, some weeks, if not months, away from launch in a number of markets. Have we got a launch date for New Zealand yet?
No.
I've heard some April being bandied around.
Yeah,
but,
a couple of weeks, that's what they tell you, a couple of weeks, but then they don't sort of say exactly.
Yeah, so so probably we'll see it next month, but you know, I've heard things as far out as May or June in some parts of the world.
It could be, because we're pretty sort of low on the priority list.
Mm. So we'll see, but we all sort of saw the launch event to varying degrees. What was your take, Juha?
I thought it was overblown and, you know, not that interesting for me, myself, because I would have preferred to see the device and not the actual launch event. I mean, it's fine to have a bit of song and dance, that's great, but not the whole lot. Yeah, and also, I mean, it's always American, so all the jokes and stuff are really cheesy and stuff and appeal to an American audience maybe, but I don't know. It just didn't have that kind of Apple feel to it.
No, well, I mean, you can't blame them for not wanting to be exactly Apple. But yeah, when you looked at the launch, you're right. You know, it was pretty cheesy, and you know, I guess their take was they needed to tell a story to sort of show off the features rather than showing off the features. And you know, to a degree, in some cases that worked, and you sort of got the point. But in a lot of cases, the storytelling was maybe just too Americanized to be able to actually get the point, because you know, as you were watching it, you were just sort of stunned by their you know.
It's just terrible. Like when the what was it? One of them had a wedding ring, and they sort of took a picture with the stuff. And why? But it also made you wonder, because there's so many features on our phone.
Mm.
And they obviously felt that they really had to, somehow they had to figure out how to show them. And which makes me think that, well, okay, so some of them are quite gimmicky in that sense. There's not actually that much use, and you actually have to tell people, oh, you can do this.
So
it's not sort of like comes naturally to you, like, I don't know, Siri or whatever. So
okay, so here's a thought. Do you think that their reasoning for doing it was because they were able to take something that they might have been able to present in, say, I don't know, maybe 10 minutes if they'd just gone through and said, these are all the features.
Yep.
They were able to stretch it out for an hour. So what that meant was on the Twitter feed, that they had an hour's worth of basically free publicity as journalists and other people sitting through and watching the launch.
Suffering.
Suffering through the launch, how you want to put it, were then able to talk about it. So they ended up, and in fact, I saw a tweet from Rowan, actually, at Crown Fibre, saying, are you guys still going on about this S4? That was about 40 minutes into it.
Yeah.
And I think for people that weren't watching it, they were probably, a bit surprised that this whole thing was going on for so long.
Yeah, I mean, it just felt like it took for ages. And I mean, you're right. I mean, it is free publicity as well.
Mm. So maybe that was part of their goal, and they certainly got a chunk of that.
Yeah, but not all publicity is good publicity. So whatever anyone says, it really isn't. So I don't know, but we'll see when devices actually arrive and see what they're like.
Yeah. So based on what you've both seen so far, Nate, what's your pick? How well is this going to do? We saw, if we look back, Galaxy S2 had sold about 20 million. Handsets by the time that the S3 launched, and I think we predicted on the show here that the S3 would probably sell around, would double that to 40 million, which we're hearing it's pretty much done that.
Wow.
Is that going to double again to 80 million? Is Samsung's popularity growing that much? Is that a possibility?
I don't think so, and I don't think it's a Samsung problem. I read a blog last week, and it was talking about how the manufacturers are really getting to sort of the end of, what's a good way to describe it?
The innovation curve we've described it as before.
Yeah, you just get to a stage where you just can't really add anything more. And like a lot of the stuff that S4 really liked, but some of the things I thought were a little bit pointless, like being able to seamlessly share music. So like the example they had was a party and you could have a track playing and then share it across everyone else's phones. I don't understand why you'd want to do that when you could just plug it into a stereo.
Everyone would need to have a phone that was compatible with that, and it was a sort of a being shown off as a Samsung specific feature.
Yeah, and so,
the idea is everyone buys a Samsung phone. You see, that's sort of the marketing there.
And actually, I mean, they're doing very well. You know, that's something we have noticed. That they've taken that sort of popularity that we once knew Apple for, and Samsung are very much in that position now.
Oh yeah, the marketing. I mean, they obviously got heaps of money to spend on it. It's pretty much wall to wall at the moment. So, but yeah, I just can't see. I mean, there must be some sort of smartphone fatigue at the moment because if you look at them, if you look at the Sony device here, the Xperia Z, you look at the even your S3, the Galaxy S3, or the iPhone 5 I got here, and they're all really good. So why wouldn't you just get the cheapest one? Because they all do pretty much the same, and they all do pretty much equally well.
I have noticed a big swap, maybe in the last year, where you'd go out with a group of friends and sort of friends of friends, and everyone would have the iPhone.
Mm.
And I have noticed that has completely swapped to Samsung.
Mm. It's been a big swing, hasn't it?
Yeah, and it's fascinating because I used to be the only Samsung user in the crowd of iPhones, but it seems now I'm one of the crowd. So,
but would you upgrade yours if you had to? I mean, if you had to actually, you know, pay for it and stuff.
I would change the S4 mainly because as the new model comes out, the S3 will drop its value quite quickly. So I tend to, as soon as the S4 will come out, I'll quickly swap over. And that's mainly just for value.
It's a good time to do it, isn't
and
it?
And the LTE, because I bought my S3 too early and I haven't got the LTE version. So that would be another driving factor. But of all the other features, not really. Like 2 gig of RAM, 8 processors. I don't.
So yeah, I mean, really some of the standout features are the full high definition screen, 13 megapixel camera, which there's some debate over whether, you know, going to that that number of megapixels is good or bad. The ability for both the cameras to work at once, and now that we don't know whether the New Zealand model is going to have the 4-core or quad-core processor or the 8-core, octa-core, processor, because they've said that in their specs that there are two models, but it doesn't seem to be clear which markets are going to get which. Although if we look back at the Galaxy S3, of which there was a dual core and a quad core, New Zealand got the higher end model. So one might think that will be the same case this time around. Although I'm not sure that we can probably guarantee that, because
we'll probably get the same as the Australians do. That's what usually happens.
That's true. Yeah.
So
I like the phone, but there is nothing in the there's some cool stuff, but there's nothing in the thing that would make me want to jump immediately across to it.
Hmm. Yeah, pretty much same here. Okay, I mean, I like big screens. I had the
it's the gorgeous screen on the Sony here, right? On that Xperia Z. I was using it last night. Think, I played down the full high definition screen, but using it is pretty fantastic.
Yeah, no, it makes all the difference as well. I had a Galaxy Note for a while, the Note 2, and I actually really like it. Some people think it's just way too big.
Oh, it's a great screen.
But I loved it. I thought it was really good. Mm. So. I mean, I'd probably pick up a cheap one of those instead.
All right, so it's not something that we have to have, but realistically, this thing's going to sell a lot of units. Would both of you agree it's likely to outsell the Galaxy S3, that it's going to be a 40 million plus sort of sales seem likely globally?
Depends on the price. I mean, if it's a real premium device, and with 8 cores and everything else, if that's what Samsung is taking it, then I don't think so, no.
Well, I think, we can expect it's probably going to come at a similar price to what the S3 launched at. Wouldn't that be fair to say? Usually, vendors don't usually bump the price up when they replace one model with the next. I mean, we've never... unusual to see that. Certainly, Apple sort of set that standard. They release a new one and it comes in at the same price. Other vendors sometimes bring the price down a little, but not usually up. So,
but I don't think Samsung has that sort of... Apple kind of compulsory behavior when, as soon as anything new comes out, there's a queue out there. I mean, I remember when the all the Samsung stores and stuff, when they launch new products, there's hardly ever queues. It's not like Apple when the new iPhone comes out and people camp outside them and stuff like that.
No, so, something unique there about Apple in terms of the fanaticism of of Apple fans, but that seems to be specific to certain products. Certainly not the case across the board with their products, but it is fairly unique. I mean, we see a little bit of queuing, I think, for for some of these devices, but I think Apple have sort of they've built it. There's this sort of expectation that that's going to happen, so people will go and queue up for. For the fun of it, and often it's a global sort of launch, so there are people queuing all around the world at the same time, sort of thing. Whereas there aren't many other vendors that'll probably launch.
It's just a phone, people. It's a phone. Come on, you don't need to do this.
Oh, come on. You love the gadgets.
No. But Samsung even know about that, because remember seeing the ads where they actually...
They make fun of that, don't they?
Yeah, the parents in the queue, and then the kid goes off and saves and yada, yada, yada. So even Samsung sort of take the mickey out of Apple for it.
Yeah. Just order online, We just queue up.
But you got to stand outside in the cold.
Oh, God, I don't want to do that.
Be the first to get it.
Oh, yeah, starting to get cold in New Zealand by the time it comes through. All right, well, we're going to wait and see. I'm not really ready to make any predictions on sales. I mean, I would think that they're going to sell more than the S3. I think they've got the momentum. The brand is extremely strong. It is definitely a step up on the S3, I think. Certainly I'm going to reserve any more judgment until we get hands on with it. And hopefully we'll have that within the next week or so. So maybe on next week's NZ Tech podcast, we'll be able to actually give some feedback of a little bit of hands on. But certainly as of today, as far as I'm aware, that none of them are in the country. The only ones we heard about were sort of software prototypes that have been sitting I think the telcos maybe have some to start getting their software ready, but the outside of the phone
they actually
didn't,
the branding and everything
didn't
else
have the look and the feel. And it was probably sort of a brick, basically, but with the same with the right software in it. So, we'll wait and see. Reserve judgment on that one. But it's certainly good to see the ante being upped, as it were, continued competition in this space, because we are, you know, still seeing better and better devices and getting a little bit more for our money. So that's a good thing.
I was going to say Steve Jobs was right to go for Android and Google in court, because look what Samsung is now.
Well, that didn't help them, though, did it?
No, it didn't help them at all. But
no. All right. In Auckland, right now, there is a massive computer network outage that seems to be impacting Auckland University and Auckland University of Technology. Now, usually, these sort of outages aren't really a big deal, but my understanding is that this has been going on, at this stage, has been going on all day. You've had a bit of an inside word on this. What can you share that you've heard so far?
I had a quick talk to Steve Whiteside, the CIO there, and he told me that happened after they tested the generators, as one does at the data center, because obviously you need to make sure that they work if something happens. And it appears that they didn't switch over properly and didn't work, and because they're migrating data centers now to the new Tamaki one, the network setup, Steve told me, is quite complicated, so it's really bad timing for them, and they're doing their best to get it up online now again, but probably talking tomorrow at the earliest.
Yeah, because they've got Auckland University's got 5,000 staff and somewhere in the direction of 41,000 students, so it's quite a few people impacted. AUT, 2,000 staff and 30,000 students is what NBR's advised. So this is a lot of people
for New Zealand. It's sizable that are
impacted. We've seen network outages in New Zealand before. I'm sure IBM won't like being reminded of their outage with in New Zealand.
The outages?
Had a fair bit of media coverage. But these things will happen from time to time. I'm sure there's a few red faces and so on, and they'll afterwards be looking in and seeing, well, how can they avoid it in future? We've seen outages in recent days. I think Microsoft had one with Hotmail and some of their services last week.
Google Drive was
for a number of hours
Earlier today.
Okay. Yep. So I don't think anyone's entirely immune to these things. But
No. What is interesting though is that there's no real life or manual kind of plan B here, because the students are now, their assignments and stuff are getting delayed, and they can't actually do their work. So that's how dependent we are. So we can't even do our education without IT or functioning IT.
Everything relies on the internet and all these pieces working, right?
Yep. So we can't just pick up pen and paper and just carry on learning. Got to sort of wait for the internet to come back up.
Well, there is an Auckland company called Plan B who I'm sure would love to be doing business with Auckland University, and they're designed to sort of provide that backup if something goes wrong.
Well, pen and paper.
In terms of replicated networks and disaster recovery plans and so on. I'm not sure actually even if they would have the scale to provide a Plan B for Auckland University, but interesting all the same. Let's hope they get back online and everyone can get back to work shortly. Google have been in the news in a not particularly pleasant way over the last few days, with people being rather frustrated that they're ditching
furious
one of their products.
Absolutely furious.
Google Reader. Yeah. Now, do you guys use Google Reader? I know I do.
Yeah, I do.
I do.
So, and it seems to be that
I have over 1,000 feeds in it. Seriously, I do.
So maybe you can describe to listeners, who's, some of which won't use it, what it is and what it does for you, and why it makes your life better.
It's actually surprisingly hard to explain what RSS is, these feeds as well, because I've tried it before. I stood up in a room of 120 people and tried to explain what it is. I thought it was really simple, and I went through it and sort of drew things and everything else. And afterwards, I said, oh, so I can just do that in a browser and use bookmarks. And I said, well, no, not quite. But I use it all the time because it's a single point, single focal point, and I get basically all the information I need from governments, from vendors, everywhere. Into
it, I mean, it lets you sort of, I guess, draw content from all the sources that you're interested in hearing from on a regular basis. So, you know, somebody might have in their feed the NZ Tech podcast, so they can see what our blog posts are and listen to our episodes. They might get a feed from Geek Zone of all the news stories coming in there, maybe, you know, a feed from all sorts of news sources, and just pulls it into one place, and you can access it on your phone
or through whatever device. You can search it. You know, you've got this sort of treasure trove of stuff, and it's all there. You don't have to fire up your browser and go to different sites, which is really time-consuming. So it's all there. It's a fantastic thing.
Mm. And there are a lot of, you know, products that we use that sort of hang off the back of it, too, in terms of, you know, reading the content. You don't just have to, you know, access it directly through Google. Mm. So they're shutting it down. They've decided, look, we don't make any money out of this. It's a free service. It's costing us to deliver it. And
scandalous.
It hasn't grown in usage over the last few years. It's sort of, you know, going backwards a little bit. So, they're cutting it off at the knees.
That's debatable. It's they say it hasn't grown, but I've seen figures that show that it's a steady uptick, you know, because it's an uptrend really in use as well. So,
what to do for all of our listeners that rely on Google Reader in some way? What is the ultimate solution?
Just hold on and hope Google reverts their
some would say maybe they're doing this for a bit of publicity stunt, and that's their plan. Their plan all along was, look, oh yes, we're going to listen to our customers, and we're going to leave it running, and they were never planning to pull it.
It's not true. If Google actually wanted to stand up and shout, hey, this is exactly the problem with cloud services, we could just pull them anytime we want, then that would be the way to do it.
Because that's a risk, isn't it? With all of these free things that we sign up for and use, I mean, it could be gone tomorrow. You know, Google might say,
"Gmail,
we're going to get rid of Gmail. We don't make enough money off the advertising." Customers, it's gone. But I mean, we haven't seen that happen with a lot of products. I mean, maybe would it be fair to say Google have pulled more products than anyone else? And had Google Wave, which was, you know, shown off as being this huge, amazing thing, right?
Yeah.
And there were some people that sort of jumped in, boots and all with it.
It was very popular in some countries. I think like Orkut as well. It's very popular in Brazil and completely bombed everywhere else. But
these things have been turned off. And Microsoft have turned off, you know, some of, you know, they've shut down some products in recent years with not doing so well in a particular space. And they've, they've squeezed their product range. Mm. But not so much with free products. So they haven't had as many as Google. Had lots and lots of, you know, products and services sort of that we can utilize online.
But every year seems like
a really surprising one to be pulling.
And I think it's going to actually have a real impact on quite a few publishers as well. Because I don't know. I mean, what was the CNN figure? It has something like 10 million or was it 20 million subscribers even? Now they're all going to disappear. So when it was it April? No, sorry, July. It does in July. So it'd be interesting to see the traffic figures. What happens there?
Yeah, because people are accessing through that channel. Well, yeah. I think we've got other solutions, right? So Feedly is one of them. It seems to be the main one that that people are jumping on with, and it lets those that are using Google Reader sort of translate or push their feeds across to Feedly. And it seems more than likely that most apps and so on that rely on Google Reader today will be at a reasonably easy rejig to tie in to Feedly. So there might not be as much of a pain as one might expect because it's a few months to sort of get things right. But you know, I'm sure some will be impacted.
My question is, out of the three of us here in the room, do you know anyone else? Sorry, the other two of us. Do you know anyone else that uses RSS feeds?
I know lots of people.
Yeah, yeah.
But see, it could be my work
circle of friends. See, if I think about everyone I know, Very few use RSS feeds. I think it tends
to be more technical people, doesn't it?
Yeah, and
also you might not know that you're using it. You might have an app like Flipboard or whatever. Anything, all the Windows 8 and iPad ones, quite a few of those use RSS feeds. So you probably don't know it. This is where you sort of. I mean, RSS is probably something that you shouldn't have to explain. It should just be in the background because you know it works. And you don't need to explain it.
And maybe that's why Google is sort of saying, well, it just sits in the background there. We don't get much credit for it. Let's get out of that that space. But, you know, I think it does hurt their brand a little bit because, they're seen as being, so supportive to the tech community. And this was one of the things that they offered the community and that people appreciated. And now they're saying, well, we don't appreciate you, the community, enough to keep this running, right?
Well, they said it as well. They said that, haven't seen that many people use it, and even though it's like, I don't know, probably 100 million people or more. And then they said, are we going to put our energy into other areas? And so, okay. So you can't actually keep this one going. Yeah. It's quite amazing.
Yeah. So, all right. Now, something that I actually picked up on GeekZone in the last few days was some free airport Wi-Fi. This seems to finally sort of have grown a little bit around New Zealand. I know at Wellington Airport, there's been free Wi-Fi there for some time, but this seems to have stretched to Auckland International Airport. And I think Christchurch as well. And it used to be you could get Wi-Fi, but you had to pay for it. Now, what I understand is there's you can get 30 minutes of free public Wi-Fi access in Auckland, and I think in Christchurch as well. So, yeah, it's good. We're sort of finally starting to move into
whatever everybody else has
in line with other trends. I mean, 30 minutes isn't much, but it's certainly better than nothing. And I think of visiting Singapore even years and years ago, and them having free Wi-Fi and internet access and in various
trains there and Hong Kong and stuff. You get they actually got 3G and Wi-Fi on them.
So, trains and buses So. We just seem to be a little bit behind in these regards. So, hopefully this is a sign things are going to improve. It'd be great to see it on public transport. I think there's at least one bus or coach company, I think, in New Zealand that has some sort of capability along those lines, I think.
Yeah, I think it's Wellington.
Wellington bus, yeah.
Hopefully the stuff keeps... keeps continuing because it's a great help and great for tourists as well that are maybe just arrived in the country, they haven't got a SIM card or something yet, or maybe they're not going to even get a local one, and they can still communicate if there's accessible wireless.
There's a couple of as a person who provides free Wi-Fi to customers, it is a big selling point for us, especially like on weekends. We get a lot of backpackers who come in and buy food and sit there and chat and catch up on Facebook. The other one is business meetings, especially if you've got a couple of laptops. There's nothing more frustrating than trying to work out, because most people have got smartphones, don't really know how to hotspot properly. So if you've got free Wi-Fi that you can just connect and work, the one recommendation I'd have is if you are looking at doing it, make sure you've got some hardware that can enforce some either megabyte limits or time limits. There's a cafe in Manukau that I go to quite a bit, and I've just got a wireless access point.
Completely open.
It's actually completely open to the fact where I logged in with their admin username and password and had a bit of a look around. Didn't do anything, but just had a bit of a look around.
No.
Do not do that. Find someone who knows what they're doing. Find some hardware.
Get it set up
because
properly.
Yeah, and the Copyright Act. Remember
exactly.
That as well.
Mm-hmm. Otherwise, people, downloading
your account holder,
all sorts of stuff, and then you can get the fine.
Bingo.
And the other thing, there's a few risks around being a user of public Wi-Fi, isn't there, Nate?
What
recommendations would you have around that?
I started a thread on GeekZone probably about a month ago. We had a customer who tweeted about how he wouldn't use a free Wi-Fi because you could eavesdrop and it should be secure. And I'm not amazingly technical, so I sort of bounced it off the other far more clever folk at Geekzone. And the general consensus was, even if there was a password, you're all sort of sitting in the same pool, so you could sit there and easily listen into all the other traffic that's there. So you need to either use HTTPS or secure, so that's where the little padlock appears in your browser, or
which most email systems now will do automatically and accessing banks. But if you're putting a password into, you know, a public website that doesn't have the padlock or the HTTPS, then potentially someone can actually listen in and grab your details. So correct. There is a real need to be cautious with that, isn't there? And particularly if you're logging into a workplace or you're dealing with information that shouldn't just be made publicly available.
Correct. Try and push everything across HTTPS or SSL as much as you can. It's probably a good idea. Or even if you've got the technical know-how, VPN back to a safe network like your work or your home, so then at least all the traffic's encrypted right from your laptop but out to a known safe endpoint.
And just remember not to click on that Remember Me box when you sort of log into your Gmail or whatever.
Yeah.
All right, well, that's just about us for this week. A couple of little bits and pieces. Telecom, a bit of a shake-up within Genoa, particularly within Australia. And we know they've sort of had some announcements around cutbacks of staff, which, you know, I guess as their business changes, that's just a reality for them to stay competitive. But it looks like their IT business, Genoa, is really sort of cutting back in Australia.
Oh, absolutely, massively. They're down two-thirds of staff there. Mm. And, but it's quite funny because he, at one stage, decided to go for the small business sector there. And now they've decided, well, that didn't work, so now they're going to go for the big corporates, but only the corporates that have trans-Tasman connections.
So it's all about making sure that they're providing the connectivity between the two between the two countries, which is... As you can see from their point of view, that's probably profitable business. Mm. But are they going to win customers on that basis? What if a customer wants to use their services, but then somewhere along the lines finds they're not competitive in that space, or vice versa, finds they're competitive but doesn't want to use their IT services? I don't know. I'm not sure if that's a good fit. But I guess they've crunched the numbers and they've had a good look at it, and they need to rationalise their business a little bit, and that makes sense to them.
They are going to exit business, as I call it, which is just basically telling customers that, no, sorry, we don't want to do business with you. Mm. And I'm not sure how that's going to pan out, because obviously if you're happy with Genoa, but you don't fit the model or bill or whatever, and you're just basically told to pack your stuff and leave.
Mm. It's not a great way of building trust,
no,
is it?
Not really.
So do you think that could leave other customers thinking, well, we should leave too because we're not confident that we won't be fired somewhere down the track as a customer? There's a risk of that, isn't there?
There's a risk of that. So. It's quite a game or gambit.
And do you think that could be could impact even customers on this side of the Tasman, where people will think, well, we actually... we don't know where Telecom is going with Genoa.
I say you should be prepared for the worst to happen now, really, and just make sure you've got some alternative arrangements.
Mm. Well, I guess it is a volatile market at the moment, and we've seen a number of companies in the IT services space that have had to shut their doors or go through some painful processes.
Oh, absolutely, which also makes you wonder why Genoa is doing it like this, and instead of just hanging on to everything and managing it in a more gentle fashion, basically.
Mm. Mm. Interesting.
And, people giving you money, they're really good. You should be very careful with them. Nice people.
Well, yeah, I guess it depends where they're making money, and I guess that was probably the problem. Mm. Now, finally, you had a story that was published in Australia this morning.
Yeah.
Talking about military researchers publishing some cyber warfare
manuals.
Tell us what this is all about.
Yeah, it's a little bit more complicated than that. It doesn't actually tell you quite how to sort of go hacking if you're a government or whatever. It talks about the international law around it and when certain things are applicable, and what you can do and what you can't do. And it's about 20 very sort of heavyweight international legal experts have written it, and they've written it for a NATO-related organization. So it's very likely to form a part of several Western countries' policy. And there's some interesting things in there. And the most interesting thing I thought was that large-scale online attacks can be seen as an excuse for full-scale war.
That's amazing, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, this is such a transition. We, you know, 5 years ago, we would have never even thought about thinking this way.
Right.
I mean, now we're hearing that the US is more concerned about cyber warfare than they are about traditional terrorism.
Yeah, basically.
Is what we're hearing. Do you think cyber warfare is this much of a risk to New Zealand?
Well,
where do you think we fit in the picture of it?
I mean, I'd say that probably whatever's been late sorted out there, and cyber warfare is a bit of a stupid expression anyway, as you know, but most of our infrastructure now, and as we saw with the university as well, everything runs over networked systems.
Mm.
So obviously, if you can disrupt that, take out the traffic lights or set them all to green, whatever, do something like that. If you can do that, then you can do a lot of damage.
Yeah.
And I don't know, the smart electricity meters, get into those, have fun with them. You can track people without them knowing. Everybody's got a smartphone, which tells you exactly where someone is. All that. So, yeah, there is a risk of that. I mean, I wouldn't call it cyber warfare, because that's just stupid. I would call it more like surveillance and sabotage and that kind of stuff.
So if we look back at a favourite old movie of mine, Enemy of the State, I'm sure both of you must have seen this.
No, I missed that.
You haven't?
No, I haven't seen it.
Okay, well, you've got to, anyone that hasn't seen it, you've got to go and see it with, that's Will Smith, isn't it?
No, I haven't seen it. No.
And, it was, at the time that it came out, I don't think it was, when it came out in 1998,
I wasn't even born.
I think the story was probably somewhat far fetched. Put it that way.
Mm.
But you know, if we look at the sorts of things that were showed in the movie at that time, I think that the possibilities of most of it is there's nothing too out there about it. So
anything you can imagine will happen, but maybe not in the form you imagine. So when you look at some of the old films, and if it seems plausible, then yeah, it will happen.
Mm.
It just might not happen the way it was described in the film, but it will happen.
Scary stuff. Yeah, all right. Good. Well, people can track you down on Twitter to keep track of some of the news stories that you're publishing. Now, what's your Twitter handle? You might want to spell it out, or we'll put it up on the nzttechpodcast.com website for people that
I should really shorten it. Actually, it's at Juha Saarinen, which takes about half an hour to spell, so I won't.
Okay. Well, we'll put the link online, and you write for a number of publications, right? So the best place to find out is via your Twitter handle. You've also got a blog posted via Geekzone. What's the URL for that one?
It's again a bit long. It's juha.saarinen.org. O-R-G.
Okay.
So, but otherwise, if you type in my unique name in Google, you have to learn to spell it first, then you pretty much find me.
Excellent.
I'm not the MMA artist, sadly.
And Nate, you're pretty easy to find on Twitter at Nate.
That's the one. I was just going to say, with you, that's the one I should get an award, because I can spell it right every time.
Oh, wow.
Just Nate on Twitter, and then my blog is just natedunn.com.
Excellent.
Which is powered by Geekzone, so yeah.
Yep, and my Geekzone blog is techjungle.com, and I'm pretty easy to find on Twitter too. Paul Spain is my Twitter handle. That's us for the week. If you want to track us down online, nztechpodcast.com. We're also on Facebook and Twitter and Google+. And next week we have some gadgets to give away. So we're going to make it pretty easy if you're interested in winning a new gadget. And the other thing I can tell you is your chances of winning are usually pretty good, because only a single-digit percentage of listeners tend to actually get round to entering these things. So
Can I enter?
What's this gonna be?
Yeah, you can always enter, and if your name gets drawn out of the digital hat, then away you go. We'll have one or two gadgets to give away. 2Degrees have been kind enough to share a Google Nexus 4 smartphone with us. Which is very, very cool.
Yeah.
And I think there may be one or two other gadgets from our testing cupboard, or from my desk, that we'll be giving away as well. So
what about the chalky fingers?
No, we won't be sending those out. They'll all be gone very, very quickly.
I'm starving.
But hey, thanks everyone for listening in, and we will catch you again next week. See ya.
See you.